911, what's your emergency?
Help. I've been shot.
You're awful.
Oh, I love it. I love it. No, okay. One take wonder. Come on. It's right. So good.
I actually just remembered what my idea was for the opening bit just now. It was a really bad idea. And it was you being the dispatcher, and then I just start singing the song You're Awful, which I believe is a song from the movie version of On the Town. The musical On the Town. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Frank Sinatra, Gene Kelly, maybe.
I've heard of it.
So this is like a running joke in my family, sort of, because we like caught like part of this movie on TV a while back, and it's got this song in it. I think it's Frank Sinatra that sings it to like the girl he likes in the movie. And it's this crazy song where the joke is that he's just like telling her she's like insulting her, but then he'll like pull it back around to being something good in a way that I find really funny. So it's like, you're awful nice to look at.
I just want to say, Jane, you said that we couldn't do a Vine reference because you were afraid that our audience wouldn't get it.
Okay, I told you this was a bad idea, and I wouldn't have, this was like my joke idea. I wouldn't have actually used it.
I'm just so obsessed with that.
You're right.
She doesn't know that he hung up on her, Vine, but she does know you're awful.
On the Town.
Awfully beautiful. From On the Town, the musical.
On the Town is a very popular musical film, Ryan.
You're right. I mean, it's no Mean Girls, but it's very popular.
No Mean Girls, the musical. It's Bernstein. It's Bernstein. The You're Awful song isn't Bernstein. I think they only used like one or two songs from the original stage musical in the movie. You know, it's the one with New York, New York. It's a wonderful town. You know,
can you even call it the same musical at that point?
It's a thing they used to do in Hollywood. Like, if you were adapting a stage musical, there was like a 50-50 chance that it would have some songs from the original.
That's like a full ship of Theseus moment. Like,
I know.
How many, you know, I mean, can you rebuild it with the songs they didn't use and make a new story?
One of my favorite Fred and Ginger movies is The Gay Divorcee. Gay as in happy. It was based on a stage musical called Gay Divorce, which is even funnier. And it had songs by Cole Porter, and then in the movie they used literally like one Cole Porter song, Night and Day, which is a very famous standard, and they just replaced all the other songs with like random bullshit that they thought would sell better, I guess.
I do love a good Cole Porter, though. I think my favorite Cole Porter song might be You're the Top from Anything Goes.
Oh, yeah, because that one also has become funny with age.
That song is so fucking funny.
Baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top.
true cultural, two cultural archivists might know this, but in season 3 of Glee, we haven't even talked about 9-1-1 yet, but I'm talking about Glee.
Don't worry about it, Queen. Don't worry about it.
They brought on Jeff Goldblum and Brian Stokes Mitchell to play Rachel's gay dads. Perfect casting, in my opinion.
Except for the fact that retconned her two dads she had shown a picture of, one of whom was black in season 1.
Yeah, Brian Stokes Mitchell is black. He's just lighter skinned than the guy that they got in the Polaroid photo.
Well, yes, that's what I mean.
In order to, like, I guess, like, give them more, I guess, incentive to come on the show, because in the episode they do like a live little snippet of the song You're the Top. But they also released just they recorded and released a full version of them doing it as a duet. It's
That's
everything.
Crazy.
And
how did I not know this?
It takes like the double entendre, like that came out with the benefit of hindsight. It takes that double entendre to like an extreme, and it's so fun to listen to. And also, they sell the fuck out of that song. Brian Stokes Mitchell,
sure.
Love of my life. Sells the fuck out of that song. I love it so much. It's like my preferred recording of that.
Well, obviously the obvious joke with that song is the top and bottom thing, but my other favorite thing about the Cole Porter song You're the Top from Anything Goes is that the entire concept of the song is listing a bunch of 1930s references, and so now they have become like totally inscrutable, most of them. You know, like it'll be saying stuff like, you're an arrow collar, like you're a Coolidge dollar. It's like, what the hell is any of that?
I'm literally gonna look up the lyrics and we're just like gonna run through some of the funniest of them.
Yeah.
Because like it's there's hilarious. The ones that like you like are still like understandable. It's like you're the top, you're the Colosseum, you're the Louvre Museum, you're a Shakespeare's sonnet, you're Mickey Mouse. You know, like
they say
like that
you're
sort of
Ovaltine,
thing.
You're a Botticelli, you're Keats, you're Shelley,
you're a Bendel Bonnet. Like that.
What the hell is a Bendel Bonnet?
Right, like that makes less sense. Your Garbo salary, like people don't know Greta Garbo anymore, unfortunately.
That's a good one. Now you would imagine, like, imagine if they did it on Glee and they like changed all the lyrics in a really cringy way to be like 2015 references or whatever. Like your Drake salary.
Your Drake salary, your Hotline Bling, your Bang Bang, your My Everything. Oh, bars. Okay. I do want to say some of these rhymes are absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Like you mentioned the Coolidge dollar. So it's like you're a Coolidge dollar. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire. You're an O'Neill drama. You're Whistler's mama. You're Camembert.
Like,
it's good. It's good.
It's great. That Cole Porter, he was the musician and the lyricist, the composer and the lyricist, I believe. And he was gay, so like jot that down. Although I'm sorry I'm going off on tangents, but I think people find it fun to hear people talk about obscure knowledge that not a lot of people talk about anymore. They made a Cole Porter biopic back in the day in like the 40s called Night and Day, starring of all people, it starred Cary Grant. Who, if you've seen pictures of Cole Porter, they're not exactly like twin brothers. And most ridiculously, of course, because the movie's from like 1946 or whatever, it depicts him as like a totally heterosexual guy with like, you know, great love affair with a woman in his life. And it's like just so far removed from what the guy's life was presumably actually like.
I mean, that is the most flattering biopic depiction I think I've ever seen in my life.
It's true. I would be, even if they made me straight, I would be like, you know what? I forgive you. Thank
That'd
you
be
for
like,
casting me as Cary Grant.
It'd be like doing like a, I don't know, like a Salvador Dali biopic and casting Robert Pattinson or something. Oh, wait, they did that.
I forgot about that. Is that still coming out?
That came out in 2007.
Did it really?
It did.
This is like a Mandela effect thing. I feel like I had heard of this as like an upcoming project. Okay, to be fair, I'm looking up pictures of Dali. He was not a bad looking guy. I mean, he was crazy looking with his mustaches and stuff. But like as a young man, he looks like a like a hot guy.
Yeah, he did. Little Ashes. Sorry, 2009. But that was the one. And this is for you cinephiles out there. That was the one where they actually had him masturbate on camera. And this didn't show up, but he actually did it. That freak.
He's known for stuff like that. Well, I don't mean like stuff like that, but for crazy acting choices is what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, we get into the episode we're talking about
today? Welcome back to First Res Podcast. I'm editing this, so we'll see how much of that stays in the episode.
Honestly, I vote for all of it.
I do too.
Welcome back to the First Res Podcast. On this glorious day, we are discussing season 2, episode 5, Awful People, written by, guess it, Kristen Riedel.
Yes. Hey, Kristen. How you doing?
I didn't look that up until like the end of the episode, me watching it, and I was kind of like, I knew it, like something about this episode, it has that fun vibe that Karma's a Bitch had in season 1.
Mm-hmm. Like Karma's a Bitch, we actually get a returning character from
that
episode.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe Kristen herself was a big fan of her original, her OC, Porch Pirate Lady.
Listen, I don't blame her for that. I am not mad at that at all. If no. I was like writing an episode in season one and created a character for that and was tasked with writing an episode for season two, I would totally do a callback to my own work. Mm-hmm. This is my own internal continuity. I would have a whole life for that person, okay?
She probably wrote like a whole character. She wrote a whole character biography for Porch Pirate with like her tragic backstory and why she is the way she is.
Character sheet, like D&D. Like,
yeah. Well, we do those in so writing good. Too.
And so it opens, there's this cold open, right? There's this dude, he's loading a flat screen TV into his car, looks very expensive. He's got a nice car, it's like a Wrangler or something like that. It's like a nice Jeep. And then as he's backing out of his parking spot, he seemingly hits a woman with his car. And,
a woman who came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. And she is seemingly very hurt, very in pain about this.
She's really freaking out.
Yeah, she's freaking out, but not enough to the point where she can't stop to notice the really nice paint job on this guy's rims. So, of course, how does this end but of her collecting a big fat insurance check?
$12,000, it said.
$12,000. You know what that is? That is 1/6 of 96,000. 96,000. Is that 1/6? Wait, let me do the math.
No, 6 times 12 is 72.
Oh, it's 1/8. It's 1/8. She just has to do it 8 times and she gets the jackpot from In the Heights.
We both have art degrees, guys, okay?
I'm gay. I'm gay. I didn't even take the SATs, okay? Like, leave me alone.
Well, but, anyway, that was good. Speaking of which, there's also a needle drop in here, which is
yes,
She
is.
Works
I
Hard
so
for the Money.
About this.
She Works Hard by for the Donna, Money by Donna Summer. It's
Summer.
A great song.
Such a great song. Such an all-time banger.
And we start to see
I
this montage of this woman just doing this over and over again to people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we see her doing it in various ways. She goes to like a mall food court, pumps a big little thing full of ketchup, drops it on the ground, deliberately slips on it, makes a big stink. Yeah. And we see, like, at one point she's in a parking lot. She's got, like, a trunk full of, like, crutches and canes and stuff that she can use to go to the insurance place and file a claim and make it look like
she seems
she's super
to be, like,
injured.
A yeah, like a career fraudster. Like, this is, like, her bread and butter.
And she's good at it seems.
Well, she is. But she's in the parking lot, presumably of the same mall, and she sees an old woman walking to her car. And so she gets in position. Right? And as the woman is about to put her car in reverse, what happens to her? What happens to her?
She gets actually rammed by a car.
The full Regina George.
Yes, it's hilarious. You see this like
Regina George.
We're like in front of the old lady's car, so we see this like out her back windshield. Just the lady getting mowed down, like earnestly hit by a car. And then once she's on the ground, the lady also backs up and runs her over.
Yeah. She gets fucking wombo comboed in the parking lot. And then, of course, the lady calls 911 because she hit a woman with her car, or she ran over a woman. And,
yeah, she's like, I think I killed her.
And the 118 responds. Bobby is looking snatched, as always. And she's still under the fucking car. She's still under the car. The 118 rolls up, and I believe it is Hen that recognizes that face. That face that is unforgettable. Because when was the last time they saw her? Where's the last time they saw her? Oh, wait. It's the goddamn Porch Pirate.
It's the Porch Pirate. Athena has shown up. And yeah, she also recognizes her as she says, it's the damned Porch Pirate. And at this point, she says, the Porch Pirate in question says that she has attended her court-mandated therapy. But at this point, you're thinking like, man, Lorraine, like you need serious help. Potentially more serious than you've gotten before. Because although she has given up the porch pirate thing, she has just moved on to a new addiction, which is insurance fraud.
She graduated, if you will, because insurance fraud, as we know, is a much more serious crime. I believe it's a felony, as opposed to misdemeanor theft, which is, I believe, what she was looking at before. And I just like I love how on her side we were kind of at the end of her call last time we saw her. Like, we were feeling mm-hmm. bad for her. We were pitying her because she had a mental illness. This was a difficult thing that she was going through, and yeah. like obviously it was like a bad thing she was doing. But it was a manifestation of a deeper issue.
And now it's like she has made absolutely no effort to improve yeah. herself.
The therapy did not help.
No, it did not.
Basically. Yeah. And as she is being loaded into the ambulance, she mm-hmm. She threatens the 118 with a lawsuit because yeah. perhaps she received improper care mm-hmm. last time they were dealing with her.
A lawsuit, oh God. You say? Is this season 3 foreshadowing?
Well, Buck is still on the 118 side right now, so we at least don't have to dive into that mess for a little bit.
Right. Well, we end this little vignette with Athena saying, "Awful woman," and then we cut to the title card, which you'll recall, yeah. the title of this episode is Awful People. Awful so that's people. Just a little nod to the title of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're going to be getting more of those this episode?
You know, it's hard to say, but I think there's a mm-hmm. decent chance.
I had forgotten how on the nose this show was with name dropping its own titles. I thought when it was Trapped...
that was a unique occurrence.
That was like a one-off moment. And then I think Stuck came about. There was like Help Is Not Coming, Stuck, and it's like, okay, uh-huh. so this might be a two or three times occurrence. Shame on me. Like, fool me however many times. I think this might just be the show's MO.
I'm loving it, though, because not only is it funny, but also that means we get to run this joke even more into the ground than we already yeah. were. So I'll just do it, honestly, whenever it happens. Whenever an episode has a title that they keep repeating throughout the episode.
I'm game for that. I am game for that, absolutely.
It's very wrong movie, you know, like doing a mm-hmm. big stupid title drop. So I appreciate mm-hmm. that.
What do you say? She chose the wrong day to file insurance fraud. Wait, file a fraudulent. Well, let me try that again. What do you say? She chose the wrong day to file a fraudulent insurance claim.
Or you could say like she chose the wrong car to get run over by. Mm-hmm. Or you could say the woman driving the car chose. The wrong or no okay let me try that again.
That was a choice she made.
you could say that the guy running her over in the opening chose the wrong woman to accidentally hit with his car. Because
Vivica A. Fox, just let us know, how did we do,
Vivica?
Are we so living good, up to your right? legacy? Are we doing it? Did we do it right?
Well, from there, we go to the 911 mm-hmm. dispatch center where a yes. caller is being rude to Queen Maddie on the phone. Yeah. I was like getting pissed off for her.
Dare
and I knew
she?
It was fiction.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. How dare this caller be rude to Queen Maddie? This
it's pretty bad. Like, right before she hangs up, the lady's like, "Why didn't you just tell me that, you stupid bitch?" And then hangs up. I was like, I guess maybe partly because it's, mm-hmm. like, one of these network shows that, like, can't swear. I, like, sometimes forget that they can say bitch. So it felt very harsh to me. I was like, whoa. Like, do not say that to my girl.
You know, we haven't heard dick or pussy since the first two episodes. So maybe this is, like, maybe they're metering it out a little bit at the top of the
quota.
Season. Because they have 18 episodes.
Yeah. I'm mm-hmm. going to need a little more dick and pussy content in this show before the end of season 2.
People have been asking for that in the newer seasons. And let me just say, I am all on their side. Okay. Mm-hmm. But this, I love how this caller is just architected perfectly to just be the most nightmarish, like, customer service-esque mm-hmm. like caller you could imagine. Because she isn't giving Maddie any information. Obviously she gave like the address and like the ambulance is on its way and whatnot. But like mm-hmm. she's not gonna check the guy's pulse, obviously.
Yeah,
not
she
obviously.
Says she
I mean,
doesn't
like,
want to touch him.
Right. And it's like, I don't know the beef here, I don't know the story here, and quite frankly, mm-hmm. I don't want to get involved. But no. like you gotta give her something. You can't just like be absolutely sort of like ruining this woman's day through the phone. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the theme of the episode, you know.
It's like, but it makes sense because obviously in any job, like, you will have customers be rude to you sometimes, but it's crazy to imagine people on the phone with 911 being rude to 911. Like, I could see them, like, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a really scary moment and maybe you, like, say something you don't mean. But, like, just being, like, a rude, like, customer type to 911 seems so crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like, do you want him to live or not?
Yeah. But Maddie, like, yanks off the headset after hanging up, and she, mm-hmm. I wrote in my notes, she, Andrew Garfield in The Social Network, walks into the break room. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I'm sorry I keep referencing this movie every episode because it's, like, part of my personal brand now, but do you know, like, she walks really forcefully and angrily into the break room.
I feel like I need to rewatch The Social Network just to have a conversation with you sometimes, because, like, I've seen it once.
It's an iconic thing about the movie. There's a meme where somebody wrote on Twitter once, like, Walker, and somebody quoted yep. it with that shot of Andrew Garfield walking really mm-hmm. forcefully mm-hmm. into the Facebook headquarters.
And now Maddie is being the cunty walker, and yes, Andrew Garfield being her way to the coffee pot. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And she and meets a little diva named mm-hmm. Gloria, who is an older employee. Gloria is an older yep. employee at the dispatch. She's been there, she says, 20 years. Josh describes her as this place's Celine Dion, if that yep. tells you anything. Mm-hmm. Gloria presents her say, with a paleo muffin.
A paleo muffin. Remember paleo? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had to look up exactly what the rules of paleo are, and then look up a paleo muffin recipe just to understand what we were working with here.
Well, so share with the class. Like okay. let's talk about it.
You know, paleo, you're supposed to eat like fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, eggs, lean meats, and oils from fruits and nuts. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to eat any grains, legumes, dairy, refined and added sugar, added salt, starchy vegetables, or highly processed foods. So basically, all of the good foods uh-huh. you can't eat.
Yeah, that sounds like the worst muffin ever.
I know. So lie. I was like, God, what is this thing going to be? It actually doesn't sound that bad. The ingredients are almond flour, flaxseed meal, baking soda, baking powder, cinnamon, salt, eggs, coconut sugar, or maple sugar, which I have to say,
okay.
one of the things that annoys me so much about diet culture is these fucking assholes acting like uh-huh. because they're eating coconut sugar or maple sugar or honey or whatever, that they're mm-hmm. not eating sugar and that they're like above yeah. refined sugar. It's like, baby girl, it's still sugar. It does not have
it's still sugar.
A lot of nutritional mm. value. It is still going yeah. to do to you whatever bad things you're worried about regular sugar doing to you. And yeah. you're not any cooler than anybody else because you're getting your sugar from more expensive sources. So anyway, yeah. I just think it's funny, no, like in these paleo rules
so
that it
right.
says
you're
no refined
so
or added
right.
sugar. This recipe mm-hmm. has a half cup of coconut sugar or maple sugar and a quarter cup of maple syrup or raw honey. Guess what, babe? Mm-hmm. That is 3/4 cups of sugar. Like yeah. you can say it's not added sugar. It's added sugar. Like, what are we yeah. doing here? I don't care. I love sugar. Mm-hmm. I think you should eat sugar, but like, be serious. Why are you mm-hmm. being so annoying? Anyway, it also has...
No, you're so right. We serve baklava. Okay, at my restaurant, we serve baklava. Uh-huh. And my coworker was telling me about, like, the ingredients in it. And, like, she was, like, telling me, like, yeah, you know, it's not real sugar. It's, like, it's honey. It's like flavored with honey. God. And so, like, it's still, like, healthy. You know what I mean? And I had to ask her a whole bunch of questions to figure out what she meant. Because honey still has sugar. Honey is not
it
good
is
for you.
It is sugar. It's just sugar. Just because it comes yeah. from a tree or it comes from a bee... doesn't mean it's not sugar.
Yeah, maple syrup is bad for you. I'm sorry. Maple syrup is delicious. It's amazing. And I want to eat it on everything, but I don't eat it on literally everything because it is still not good for you. Like, moderation. Well, like, everything in moderation. Come
I don't
on.
Really care about it being good or bad for you. I'm just like, you're not going to sit here and act like you're better than me because you're eating muffins that have maple sugar in them instead of white sugar. Get over yourself. Go outside, eat a fucking cookie from the grocery store, and get out of my face. But it also has coconut oil, unsweetened applesauce, which I think is hilarious because, again, you're mm-hmm. adding 3/4 cups of sweetener to this recipe. It's like, oh, but there better not be any sugar in that applesauce. Orange zest, orange juice, vanilla extract, grated carrots, grated apples, raisins, and pecans. So it's like, it's probably going to taste pretty good because it's full of sugar.
Yeah, it sounds like a cacophony of flavors, but it doesn't sound like yeah. you're eating a salad or like a fruit salad even. Like,
so anyway.
It sounds like you're eating a muffin.
Basically, the only difference is that it's basically just a gluten-free muffin is what it is. And I'm like, I'm sorry, right. but I think humans should be allowed to eat bread. We figured that one out pretty early mm-hmm. on in our history. Mm-hmm. I actually don't think our bodies are, like, not built to consume bread.
I agree. I mean, some of them are, but, like, yeah, that's, like, that's a whole thing.
True.
Yeah, that's, like, that, that okay. is... That,
my
listen,
my
no.
apologies. My apologies no, 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 to no. the gluten-free, like, community for making... for acting like you didn't exist there for a second.
No,
sorry
no,
for the gluten-free
no, no, no.
erasure.
No, let's specify the gluten intolerant community. Let's zero
yeah.
in on
that's
them
probably the more PC term.
No, the gluten-free community, if you're gluten-free by choice just because you don't want that in your stomach even though you can process it just fine,
oh,
get
right.
out of my
then
face,
fuck you.
Yeah, men like you should be shot down like dogs.
This is a wild tangent we're going on, but again, I support leaving it in. What I'm trying to say mm-hmm. is, I was like questioning, like, what paleo muffins? Like, what is even the point of that? And I feel like I had yeah. that feeling validated by looking up this recipe. But anyway, Gloria yeah, dispatches Celine Dion.
Yeah, I gotta say, and I don't want to go on another tangent, but I just at the top, I have to get this out of the way. I can't take the name Gloria seriously because so have you ever seen like the bad American Idol auditions?
Yes, some of them.
Do you remember that one guy who comes in and his name is Ian Bernardo?
I don't know. Describe it to me.
He has two therapists and he is wearing like this like blue shirt and like baggy jeans and he has a fur to show how expensive he can be. And okay. he does Gloria and he does it like this. Gloria, you're on the run now. Going after somebody, Gloria.
Like, I don't think I've seen that one, but I like the vibe.
It's all I can think of when I hear that name now. I can't even listen to this song, and I love this song, but I can't even listen to that song now because all I can think of is fucking Ian Bernardo haunting my dreams.
Damn.
Gloria. So for the rest of the episode, I'm only going to call her Gloria.
That's fair.
And that's how it's going to be.
Well,
but
yeah,
anyways, Gloria...
Kind of...
She
right.
sort of talks to Maddie. She sort of like talks to Maddie about, you know, she's been in this game for a while and she's dealt mm-hmm. with all sorts of callers. She says, you know, there are 200 languages spoken in Los Angeles. She's been cussed out in all of them.
Kind of a little foreshadowing for Gloria's potential cultural insensitivity.
Oh, yeah. That, yes. Good planting and payoff, Kristen.
Yeah.
Love you, girl.
Thanks, Kristen.
She basically tells Maddie, you know, don't take it on. You can only control the way you react to things. And that becomes sort of a recurring theme throughout the episode mm-hmm. as well.
Then we see a little montage yeah. of Gloria, like, tearing it up at the dispatch. There's a needle drop of a song called Gloria. And mm-hmm. we see her...
Not to be confused with Gloria... You're
so
on
true.
The run now.
So true. Not to be confused with that. But it's mm-hmm. kind of a fun little montage where at first we see Gloria like doing well on the phone. And then it starts mm-hmm. to shift into like, oh, she's being mean, but like in a fun, snappy, like reasonable yeah. dispatcher way where she's, mm-hmm. you know, a guy calls in saying his house is being broken into. But it turns out he just heard some glass breaking and it's about his yeah. like second home in Florida or whatever. So she doesn't take it seriously. She hangs up. Mm-hmm. And then... suddenly she starts like responding to calls in really insensitive ways. She's saying yeah. like, oh, is this amount of crying like really necessary? And she has a crazy line where she's on the phone and she says, if you were really going to jump, I don't think you'd be calling me. Which, like, damn, this is a great mm-hmm. character. I was enjoying
character.
This immensely.
A great character. It's so fucking funny. It reminded me of like Best in Show with like the mm-hmm. dad who's like, he's like the negotiator for like when people are going to jump and he goes like, well, that's the thing they don't tell you. They always jump. And then you see him trying to, and he's like, I will gouge your eye out with my own thumb. I shit you not, you little freak. Uh-huh. It's like that level of like trying to get this person not to jump. It's so good. And I wrote down in my notes, is she ontologically evil?
She might be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a crazy line. That was my favorite one.
But one detail
from her conversation with Maddie is she mentioned, you know, if you think it would be easier to kind of see the faces of the people you're helping so that you can like empathize yep. with them more, yep. then maybe you should go on a ride along, which apparently yeah, is part of Maddie's mm-hmm. training, like, you know, sit with a cop while they go about their day. So yep. she decides to go to her friend Athena And mm-hmm. this is how, well, I say her friend, but this is the first time they meet each other. Maddie goes to the police friend. Station. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Athena already knows about Buck because she's yeah. like, she says the line, "Your brother's boss is my boo."
I wrote that down too.
would Athena say that? I mean, maybe, because now she's got this whole like no cap thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to say she has a line in this scene where she says, "Your brother and I got off on the wrong foot."
The wrong foot. Although then she goes on to like sort of like talk about Buck in a positive mm-hmm. light. She says like he has a heart of gold. And I was just like thinking like, man, I love it when they talk about like my favorite characters in like a positive way when they're not there. I don't mm-hmm. know. It feels like, oh, they like them too. Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. She's just like me.
Then they get in the squad car. Mm-hmm. She's rocking the aviators. Iconic. Yes. And they have a scene where they sort of just talk about things. Mm-hmm. that's very non-specific, but I really like their energy as they're talking.
They talk a little bit about, you know, Athena's kind of curious about why Maddie left her
right.
home,
yes.
and her mm-hmm. marriage and stuff, and yep. you
it
know,
was bad.
Maddie yep. says it was awful, which fun little nod to the title of the episode there again. And Athena has kind of a non sequitur of a line where she's like, if every woman could realize how strong she really is, that will be the day we have world peace or something. And I just thought that was funny because it's like not at all related to the theme of the episode. And so it's just like a random little thing to throw in to be like, mm-hmm. and women rock. But I appreciate mm-hmm. that. But Athena gets a little call over the radio saying, you know, asking her to respond to a disturbance. And they get there and it is a like fictionalized version of the Westboro Baptist Church, basically, yeah. who are mm-hmm. protesting a military funeral. Yeah. They've got, obviously yeah. they can't say or show the phrase "God hates fags" on ABC or on Fox. So they mm-hmm. instead have a big sign that says "Soldiers die for homo marriage," which was entertaining,
true.
At least.
True. It's so true, honestly.
I had to look up while watching this. I have always been aware of Westboro Baptist Church, but I've never really known like why they protested military funerals specifically. So I looked that up, and it seems like the only answer people have is just like to make people the most outraged at them as they could. Like, I don't think they yeah. have like a super clear ideological relationship between like why they think gay people are bad and why they think the military is bad.
Yeah.
But yes, obviously like, they were known for protesting military mm-hmm. funerals, and I presume still do. I don't really know like if they're still that active or not.
I mean culturally they've definitely fallen off. I feel like they were at their peak like in terms of cultural relevance during like the Bush administration, because it was kind of the mm-hmm. one thing that the left and the right could agree on disliking.
Yeah.
I think actually ContraPoints talked about this in her video on the quote-unquote the witch trials of J.K. Rowling. You know, it was like the one thing they could agree on was that because they hated both gays and the troops.
It does seem like their whole thing was making everybody mad. But also their big yeah. patriarch died in like 2014, which I think spurned them falling off culturally as well.
Yeah, so I first heard about Westboro because when I was like a kid and I was like learning about homophobia for the first time. And so I was like mm-hmm. looking really into like the case of like Matthew Shepard and everything, and they like mm-hmm. how they protested his funeral and everything.
Yeah.
And like that sort of like led me down this rabbit hole of like, who is this hyper-Calvinist terrorist organization? That's mm-hmm. let's figure them out. So I forgot that they were basically in this episode. And so mm-hmm. when Maddie said, "Who would protest a soldier's funeral?" I was like, oh shit,
yep.
it's yeah. about to get real. I was yeah, begging, like, and I mean begging for like a Megan Phelps Roper Gaga like parody needle drop. Do you remember the parodies that she used to do, right? Like the popper, like the I'm sorry, not the the telephone parody where she's like, "God hates your praying because you love fornicating." Oh, for fornicating.
I think I am aware of this. Is she the one from that video of like three women doing, I think it's Poker Face, and they're like,
yep.
you ain't God.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. And they say like, "Show you what I got." And one of them says 9/11, and then they go into the chorus. That's like a meme video. Yeah, I do know who you're talking about. Then.
Oh, it's so good.
I did not know she was a Phelps. I just knew her as like an internet meme.
Yeah, yeah. Megan Phelps Roper. That was it was a whole thing. But I just was begging for a needle drop and we didn't get it. So missed well, opportunity.
It is funny, though, like how obviously a like one-to-one depiction of the Westboro Baptist Church this is. Like it just literally is like in everything mm-hmm. but name.
Yeah.
So we've got this group of like, you know, disgusting, boisterous people protesting a military funeral. And, mm-hmm. you know, the uncle of the guy who died is like pleading with Athena, like, can you do anything to stop these guys? And she's like, unfortunately, it's their constitutional right to be here in protest. And I had a little twinge of like my spidey sense tingling where I was like, mm-hmm. Is this supposed to be like straw manning protesting in general? You know, is it supposed to be a way to be like, yeah, I guess it's a shame that all protesting is legal, you know?
Well, I was just figuring Athena would try to like find like a workaround in sort of like that way that she sometimes does, bending the law, as it were, mm-hmm. By like trying to find like a little loophole, like, sir, do you have a permit to use that bullhorn? This is a formal noise complaint, or like whatever it is. I don't know. But like, we didn't get that. Instead, this guy, the loudest and proudest homophobe in like mm-hmm. one of those mobility scooters.
Yeah,
he
guy.
Actually crosses off of the sidewalk and into the cemetery, and then we get the reveal that not only is he homophobic, he's also super duper racist as well.
Which I guess it's not like the biggest surprise yeah. that this guy yeah. who wrote "Soldiers Die for Homo Marriage" on his signs is like mm-hmm. not super woke in other areas.
Could you imagine?
He's an intersectional bigot.
Could you imagine? He can excuse homophobia, but he draws the line at racism.
He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa!
As like,
I'm
a
not
white
a
man
racist.
In a moped. And he starts saying some very antagonistic things towards Athena. Mm-hmm. Then he seems to have a medical emergency of sorts.
Yeah,
right?
It looks like he's, you know, in pain. He collapses. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Athena, mm-hmm. you know, calls the 118. They show up. It turns out, I like how they picked like the grossest / most unpleasant thing to have happen yeah. to him. He's got a colostomy mm-hmm. bag and it's like backing up into his like waist. He's going to choke on his own poo, essentially.
Yeah.
And Pen tries to help him. And of course, he's like, no, I don't want that black woman helping me. And, you know, Chimney tries to help. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want Chimney either for obvious reasons. And once again, I was like, this is just like an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Because I don't know if you remember.
With the fucking the swastika on his like fucking on his stomach.
Yeah, there was an episode where there was a racist guy who mm-hmm. wouldn't let any doctors of color operate on yep. him. And then I think Bailey ends up having to operate on him. And like mm-hmm. in a sort of on purpose, sort of not on purpose way, ends up mm-hmm. like messing up his swastika tattoo in the process yep. of operating on yep. him. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a classic.
Because she's collaborating, I guess, on the surgery with George. Because I think mm-hmm. that's how they finally get him to go under the knife, is that they get George in the room, and George and you know,
which
obviously
is so
George
funny,
and Bailey are tight.
Because if you've watched Grey's Anatomy, like George is not the first doctor in that hospital that you want operating on you.
No,
but that's what racism will do to you.
Yeah, unless you're in an elevator.
True. There are exceptions.
I did write down that they should just let him die, but then this episode came back to bite me in the ass over that. So mm-hmm. we'll see about that. But he does have a very funny moment where he looks at Buck and Eddie, and because mm-hmm. He's not letting Hen or Chim operate on him, and he mm-hmm. looks at Eddie and he goes, "What about him?" And then Bobby very pointedly goes, "Diaz, you're up."
Like, "Diaz, what kind of name is that?" And he starts, I always think it's funny that Eddie starts giving like his full ethnic background. He doesn't just say, like, he doesn't just say, "I'm Mexican." For some reason, the show mm-hmm. has decided to like write in what I assume to be mm-hmm. Ryan Guzman's like real life family history,
is he half Swedish?
I don't know for sure, but I was like, why would they do that specifically if it weren't the actor's background? But I could be wrong. Mm-hmm.
Ryan
like they
Guzman.
Could have easily oh. just what does it say?
So his father, Ramon Guzman Jr., was an immigrant from Mexico, and his mother, Lisa Ann Nee Hudson, was a Californian with English, German, French, Dutch, and Swedish ancestry.
That's such a white person thing. We always have to be like, oh yeah, I'm English, German, French, Dutch, and Swedish. You can't just be like, literally, yeah, I'm white.
Literally. I'm fortunate that I'm like so Irish that I can just say like, yeah, I'm mostly Irish, and then people just kind of move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I just, yeah, yeah, I always like, think it's funny that they yeah, specify that he is half white, specifically mm-hmm, Swedish.
He makes a funny quip that he's like, he can use his Swedish half right, to operate on the guy.
But they never told me what half that is. And it's like, it's almost like he's been saving up that joke or something and decides to use it in this moment, mm-hmm, even though nobody cares. But yeah, yeah, so the guy doesn't even want Eddie, little white passing mm-hmm, Eddie, to yeah, to work on him. And then he starts aspirating on his own shit. And Chimney has a great line. Chimney has a great line. He says, actual diarrhea of the mouth. Which, hey, it's true.
It is true. I just know it smelled crazy out there. Like, that ruined the funeral for good.
Thank God they were outside, you know?
These guys, this fucking, like, Westboro guys, they're so dramatic that not only do they have to mm-hmm, protest the funeral, but they have to make an absolute, literal shit show of it. I'm sorry. I just
throw puke up their own shit at the protest as well.
I don't respect the theatrics of this. I can't. I don't respect the pageantry of what they're doing here. He did. It was all for attention. It was desperate, honestly.
But you know, it takes the phrase eat shit and die to whole new levels.
And hopefully this guy died. Hopefully he did.
That was we can just assume that it happened off screen. Mm-hmm. So then yep, we go to like after they've responded to the call, Maddie, Buck, Bobby, and Athena are kind of meeting up for a second.
Maddie meets Bobby.
Yeah, Maddie meets Bobby. We get a little bit of like Bethena stuff, and mm-hmm, Maddie and Athena decide to go to lunch. So they go to this Chinese restaurant, and
Abby gets name dropped in this scene, by the way.
Yes, Maddie is asking Athena what she thinks of Abby and kind of yep, saying she doesn't approve. And Athena asks, is it the age difference? And she says, more like the time difference. Because, you know, Abby's never here. Yeah. She's always traveling the world. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that is a problem.
Yeah. Maddie has like genuine misgivings, not about Abby's like character as a person, but more so about their relationship. Because yeah, by this point, it seems like Abby's been away longer than she and Buck were together.
And she does say at one point, she's like, I'm mostly concerned that she hasn't been here for most of it, like their relationship.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it does sound like the majority of it now has been not when Abby hasn't been here.
It's so tragic to watch Buck fall into this like kind of toxic situationship setup. Mm-hmm. I just want to shake him and ask him point blank to his face, Buck, in this situationship, are you the one with commitment issues or the self-esteem issues? Because we all know which one it is. Mm-hmm. We all know which one it is. And but of course we don't get to get too deep into that because something's going down at the Chinese restaurant. You know, yes, it looks like they got raptured, to be frank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is still food on all the tables, but nobody's inside. And like the, mm-hmm, the sign says it's closed, which is confusing. And so Athena decides to go in. She tells Maddie to wait outside. She goes in, gun drawn, and nobody appears to be in there. But she finally finds in the way back of the shop, there's this guy, like presumably a cook or owner, maybe, mm-hmm, who has been shot. And, you know, she starts trying to administer medical attention. She gets Maddie back in there because, of course, Maddie used to be a yeah, nurse. Maddie starts, like, girl bossing the hell out of yeah, this situation. Mm-hmm. She is on it. Yeah. She's apparently very competent at yeah, first aid. She, yeah, you know, gets Athena to give her some plastic wrap to, like, seal the hole in the guy's chest yeah, so that mm-hmm, he can breathe better.
She's, the MacGyver of, like, nursing on the scene. She's the MacGyver of, like, being a combat medic, essentially, right now. She's yeah, got plastic wrap and scotch tape and administers CPR on the guy and gets him back in working order. Like, it's insane.
It's like more of an army medic moment than we ever see former army medic Eddie doing on the job.
Mm-hmm. I just yeah, know that if Maddie was taking the grenade out of that guy's like body or whatever, uh-huh, that ambulance would not have blown up.
Oh yeah. not to throw more Eddie shade, we're just saying Maddie is better than him. Mm-hmm. But you know, she's better than most people, I would say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She loses a pulse, I think, or he stops breathing. And so she starts doing compressions and gets him back. Like he regains consciousness and he's like, how are you here? They hung up and mm-hmm, they're like, who hung up? And he says, 911.
He hung up on her.
So that's
to
very
all
dramatic,
of our Vine lovers listening from home.
Yeah,
may she rest in peace.
Ryan is here for the Vine lovers. I'm here for the on the town lovers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's our niche. It's our niche.
Mm-hmm,
But then we get back from commercial and Josh, Maddie is telling Josh about this, and he is being a bit of a little weasel for the system at first.
He is. And he specifically makes a very odd reference, which is he calls her Nurse Nellie Forbush. Which I admit I had to look up because I have never actually seen the musical South Pacific, but this is a reference to the protagonist of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical South Pacific. And I believe, like I said, I haven't seen it. I believe it's a story about a like World War II nurse overcoming her racism. So I was like, why would he call her that?
Because it's a classic musical and he's gay. Jane.
Oh, I see. You're right. You're right. But it's ironic because it turns out to be the dispatcher who hung up on the guy turns out to be the lady who's got to overcome her racism, I would say. So I'm just like, why?
I would agree.
Why would he say that? Like, was he just trying to think of any nurse in media?
Josh Maybe. Russo. So many questions.
So many questions. I'm like, who is this guy?
But you know, he requests sort of like the number that he called down on from. Obviously, Maddie supplies it, and they sort of look through the archived recordings. And guess who answered the phone? Gloria, you're on the run now, running after somebody.
It was Gloria, and you know, big drama. She not only did she hang up, the way she hung up is, you know, the guy at the restaurant was like, didn't speak a lot of English. He's got a heavy accent, but like still totally understandable over the phone.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, kind of speaking in broken English. He's saying like, I got shot. I need help. Mm-hmm. He even like tells her the location and she's like, I can't understand you, sir. And when he like desperately is pleading with her, she's like, there's no need to yell at me. And then like he starts speaking another language and she's like, and
he's
now
panicking.
You're speaking another language. And she hangs up on him. So it's like not just that she hung up on him. It was like a very like racially motivated hang up, seemingly.
Literally. It's like, damn, she has issues and they run deep.
Yeah.
Any sort of like likability that like Gloria got from like the I guess the charismatic way in which she was abusing the people that were calling her before.
Mm-hmm.
crazy thing to say.
No, I totally agree with you.
Gone. Gone.
Yeah. And it's I do have to say, I did love this episode, but it is interesting that they never really deal with the obvious like racist element of her hanging up on people. Like they sort of explain it away as like part of her like basically as like a trauma response. Not exactly. Like they don't justify it. Like it's clearly a bad thing, but they kind of explain why she did this in the end. But I feel like it doesn't address the fact that like she was specifically hanging up on like people who couldn't speak English, people who were like, you know, just it seems like there are deeper things going on here than just the way they explain it later.
Ryan Murphy, so many questions.
True. It's all, we'll just blame him for any oversights in this episode. Kristen did nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong, queen.
Never
but we go
in her
from
life.
That but we go from that scene to Hen, Karen, and Michael are having sort of a family friends gathering in the park with Denny and with Harry. May is nowhere to be seen. Maybe she's out gallivanting
cool
or doing homework.
Little kid picnic thing.
Yeah, she's got video games to play or something. I don't know what she does. Does she
she's
have hobbies?
She's got teenage girls to get bullied by.
Exactly. She has a mom to sick on her bullies. I love that we never got a follow-up to that storyline.
I know. I love the show. Well, we do later in the show, I think. But yeah, at this point, no mention. I have to say, we misspoke recently when we said that Paisley the dog never gets brought up again, because who should be in this scene playing with the little
Paisley.
Boys? But Paisley's in this episode. So good on
nice
you,
bit of continuity.
911, for not immediately
nice
forgetting about Paisley.
Unlike Bobby's Miracle Blood. But that we
which
don't
we
have
will
to talk
never
about that right
stop
now.
Mentioning. But unfortunately, someone walks up to Harry and Denny, and it's Eva. Evil
it's
Eva.
Eva.
Do you think they named her Evil? Do you think they named her Eva exclusively because Freudian slip? Do you think they named her Eva because it kind of sounds like evil? Like, is that their stupid thought process? Evil woman?
That would be on the level of like that Family Guy clip of like Brian's writing his novel and he's like, All right, my protagonist is going to be named Norm Hull because he's just a normal guy. But that's not for the readers. That's for the scholars 100 years from now. but she's back, and she like took Paisley like from she like picked her up off the ground and everything. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, with the tats and the blonde hair, she does mm-hmm. look like a more grunged out Cruella de Vil in this scene, and I'm kind of living for it.
Like the version of Cruella de Vil that would be in like a gritty live action Disney remake now.
I would say like the version of Cruella de Vil that was like on like a gritty live action CW adaptation.
Oh yeah, for
that
sure.
completely abandons the entire premise of the original like source
oh
material.
Oh my god, a Riverdale style television adaptation of 101 Dalmatians sounds kind of awesome.
Like. Okay, so Jane and I have two projects now. we'll be doing this podcast and developing that pilot. If
developing
the CW ever
Ryan
gets
Murphy,
enough money
Ryan Murphy,
to do
call
another
us
show.
If you're interested, because this sounds mm-hmm. right up your alley as well.
This could be like...
It would be very, like, for the girls and the gays. Oh, mm-hmm. my cat this just came in. Did you hear him?
Hi, Stanley. I think this... I think what we're developing right now could be sort of what... Everything what he wanted Ratched to be.
Oh, yes.
Eva holding the dog was not meant to last because Karen is on the move.
Yes. She comes over and she... What does she say to her? She's like, you evil... She, like, really... is ready to fight.
I don't remember exactly what she said because I didn't write it down. Mm-hmm. But she is ready to like lay the smack down on Eva. I mean, like, mm-hmm. and justifiably so. I mean, if she showed her face to my child after all yeah. she put my family through, like, I could not be held legally responsible for what I would do. I'd be like Santana. Yeah. Snicks would take over, you know?
Yeah.
They start interrogating Eva on, like, what she's doing here, asking her, like, if she, like, said anything to Denny. Eva's like, you mean if I told him that I'm his real mom? Like, mm-hmm. no, not yet. And it's sort of revealed that, you know, even though she signed away all rights to Denny on the day that he was born, there's someone that didn't. There's someone that did not. And that man is named Nathaniel. And Mama, a biological father behind you.
Yes. Eva has brought Denny's biological father to mm-hmm. this park on this day. And presumably he's going to be a part of whatever legal proceedings she's trying to
yeah.
make against Hen yeah. and Karen. So yeah. we've got another Eva-related snag in Hen and Karen's life.
Another. And for the record, Nathaniel, this guy, didn't even know he had a son.
No.
Like, she says this openly, like, he didn't even know he had a kid. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, I mean, the Hen drama, we have been jonesing for some more Hen storyline, and it is yeah. getting juicy. It is getting
very juicy.
Yeah,
this is a pretty
juicy
episode. I was happy with this for Hen.
I was too.
But from there, we go back to the dispatch, yeah. and mm-hmm. Gloria is being fired because yeah. Maddie and Josh rightfully told on her. And of course, this is a very serious thing. And Josh even tells Maddie, like, it's not just the one hang up. Apparently, she had multiple calls spanning back like 8 months that she's been yeah. hanging up on. So obviously, that's like a massive issue if you're the dispatch.
Not just like multiple, as in like 3 or 4. Josh says like hundreds of confirmed calls, possibly thousands.
Which that's like potentially like hundreds or thousands of like dead people that are dead because of you, depending on what these calls yeah. were.
This woman should be in prison. But
and you know, I decided to look this up in the moment because I was like, I wonder if this is... Josh even mentions like another case of this happening, and I did find in like 2015 a guy got fired for this thing. He had done this in New mm-hmm. Mexico. It was, I believe, just one call, but it said they were like investigating to see if he had done it before. There was mm-hmm. like a woman on the phone with him who was trying to help a guy who was bleeding out from being shot. And, mm-hmm. you know, I guess she got like a little snippy with the 911 dispatcher. So he just hung up on her and the kid died. So it's like, yeah, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
But I guess there is some real world basis for this.
Something I do love about this scene where Josh is explaining the situation to Maddie is that he starts mm-hmm. kind of psychoanalyzing Gloria a little bit. uh-huh. Josh is always saying some weird shit, but he talks about sort of her divorce and the way that sort of her personality shifted a little bit after that. For the record, she told Maddie that her husband was dead. And Josh is out here like doing like a full analysis of this woman. Like it was like her breaking point or whatever. Like I'm overselling it a little bit. He doesn't go that deep into it, mm-hmm. but like it's interesting that he's making this connection as she's being actively reamed out by administration and Sue Blevins, like peer, like over her shoulder, like looming over her, like she has an axe in her hands.
it was reminding me actually of, I just watched Fargo last night for the first time. It's one of those movies that like, ooh. I've always heard a lot about. I know mm-hmm. of it. I'm a Minnesotan and it's like the one famous Minnesota movie. So obviously I knew about it, but I finally watched mm-hmm. it for the first time last night. And there's like a part of that movie where Frances McDormand, like she goes to the Twin Cities from Brainerd mm-hmm. and she like meets up with an old friend or something who's wanted to see her. And he tells her this big sob story about like, yeah, my wife died of leukemia recently and like I've been so lonely, and he like cries in front of her. And then like the next day she's on the phone with another old friend and they're like, oh yeah, no, he never even was with that woman. He like pursued her aggressively for a while and then she rejected him. And yeah, no, she's still alive. He was just lying to you, and he's like has mental problems, and I don't even really understand why that's in the movie, to be honest. I would need to read some analysis about it, but it's just one of those crazy things in Coen Brothers movies. And anyway, it reminded me of this because for some reason Gloria, who had like I guess mm-hmm. a bad divorce with her husband, is just telling everybody he's dead.
Gloria gets out of her being reprimanded and fired meeting, and she's on the warpath. Maddie is directly in her sights, and right. she is angry.
She is spiraling. Mm-hmm. She has this crazy line at the end of her like crazed rant where she says, you like mm-hmm. these people, you give them everything you have and then they leave you for your sister. So presumably
she says they're awful people.
Presumably mm-hmm. Gloria's husband left her for her sister, which is uh-huh. hard. I'll give her that. Yeah. Most of us would crash out after a thing like that, but hopefully we wouldn't crash out in such a way that directly affects people's life and death situations.
Yeah, it's hard to crash out when you have a job that like hinges on like you connecting people to life-saving medical services and like first responders. That it's hard to hold it together. So like mm-hmm. Like a part of me does want to extend my empathy to this old racist woman, but I'm gonna stop it right there. I'm just gonna cut it off right there.
She's a complex I'll say that about her.
She's got layers, and she does mm-hmm. say to Maddie, and I quote, snitches get stitches, as she's being like transported away by security into the elevator.
She is so funny. Like, I need a whole spinoff show about Gloria mm-hmm. where she's like an anti-hero. It's like a Vince Gilligan kind of thing.
Yeah. And then we go from that scene, that crazy crash out scene, to mm-hmm. Hen getting home with Denny and Paisley. Maybe she took them for a walk or like out to the park or something. And Paisley. This might be Paisley's last appearance on the show, so let's all pour one out for Paisley. We will see if we see the pooch again.
The next mention of Paisley, I think, is informing us that she has died.
Four seasons later, it needs be said.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. Maybe I'm forgetting other mentions of her this season. But anyway,
you made a 4-hour video about this show and you don't have a complete encyclopedic knowledge about every little thing that goes on inside of it?
This is like the kind of argument that like the buddy shippers on Twitter who are mad at me would make about me. Like, I'm pretty sure in the comments of that tweet hating on me for like saying negative things about Eddie, they were like mm-hmm. mad at my takes on like Josh and Michael too. And it's like, once again, like, I'm sorry, but like, you can't hate me
like
just
any
for
of the gay characters.
Yeah, I'm just homophobic, guys. Sorry. That's the secret.
Known homophobe Jane Mulcahy.
My secret's out. I'm basically I'm basically like the fake Westboro Baptist Church in this episode.
Mm-hmm. You should do the Gaga parodies. You should do the God hates all you pray. I don't know how it goes. This is your domain now, so you should know the lyrics. So another strike against Jane, I guess.
I have no idea what we're talking about anymore.
Never mind. Let's move on.
Okay. Hen gets home. Sorry. And ADHD. Hen gets home and Karen is there, and Karen mm-hmm. doesn't look happy. And, Hen sends Denny to his room and tries to talk to Karen, and Karen's just kind of steaming about the Eva situation. Is there any, like, is it because there have been, like, developments in the legal case, or is she just mad in general? I forget.
I think she's upset because, you know, Nathaniel would have a pretty airtight case towards reclaiming custody of Denny if that was a path he wanted to pursue, because of the what Eva has documented against their family in her own case for custody that we didn't really get a solid resolution to. So I think because of the sudden reappearance of Nathaniel, Karen is sort of seeing the writing on the wall that if this is the route that he wants to go down, they only have so many legs to stand on. And she's calling her lawyer, like, out of, like, office hours to, like, see if they have any avenues to explore, and he doesn't really have anything for her at the moment. So she's really stressed about that. I will say, I would love to see just one episode of Karen just, like, smiling and having fun, and, like, Hannah and Karen just, like, really enjoying each other's company and just, like, loving each other and doing something cute.
There's, like, one episode like that, I think, in, like, season 5, when finally Hannah and Karen, at least by the end of the episode, are able to, like, have a fun little story.
Oh, when
together.
They go to the club?
Which, again, it's in a Kristen Rydell season. I believe that Kristen Rydell is, like, one of Hen and Karen's, like, biggest shooters, because she always incorporates some good Hen and Karen stuff into her storylines. So, once again, it's ridiculous that some deranged shippers online act like she's, like, homophobic for saying very mildly one time that she wasn't intentionally writing Buddy as romantic. It's like, come on.
She was writing the Westboro Baptist Church scenes from lived experience of her times in the organization.
Because she was that was actually a sympathetic depiction, you know.
You were really supposed to feel for that man when he was choking on his own shit.
It's just like, I obviously I'm a buddy shipper. I'm not, like, anti-buddy shippers, but I hate this thing of, like, especially in, like, white guy ships where people will like erase actual queer people. Often in this case, it's like the black lesbians on this show are, like, don't even count as gay people to certain shippers in this fandom. It's like, come on, like, you're saying the quiet part out loud, I guess. But anyway,
literally.
Karen also says in this scene, she says, pertaining to Eva, she says, that awful woman.
Could you say Eva is an awful person? Would you say she's one of the many awful people in this episode?
I would say she's one of the awful people.
There's something sort of underscoring this scene, which is that, you know, Karen is still really struggling with Hen's affair. And even though, like, her head, you know, she understands that Hen is truly apologetic, truly remorseful. And she has sort of, like, done the work to mentally accept what happened and continue with their family. At the same time, her body is still, I guess, struggling to reconcile that with the intense feelings of betrayal that she felt with that. And so that's still at play in this relationship.
Yeah, I forgot that. Yeah, I really liked the end of this scene because I get that. Like, I think it's a very mature thought to express of, like, you know, mentally, I, like, get it. And, like, I know that, like, there's nothing more you can do to make this up to me. But it's just like, yeah, like, you are still angry. And obviously, it's still causing problems for them, like, by Eva trying to get custody of their kids. So it's like, even though, like, yeah, she knows that Hen didn't mean for any of this to happen, it's like, it is happening. And so, of course, Karen's angry. And it's like, she doesn't really want to direct that at Hen, but it's like, she's just angry in general. Yeah. And I get it.
That's difficult. And at the end of the scene, Denny comes in, and it's such a sweet moment with him and Hen. He comes over and he sort of, like, crawls onto her lap and everything. It's so adorable.
I'm
going to
say something mean, and, which is, this kid is adorable, but I have to say, at least early on in his appearances on the show, I feel like he was, like, a pretty bad child actor, which is totally a mean thing to say, because kids are not, like, they don't have to be good at acting.
This child sucks at his job.
I'm just saying. I think it's very hard to find children who can really act. I also think children's performances can, like, fluctuate a lot over the years, because, like, some child actors are really good at as kids, maybe because they're, like, kind of uninhibited and, like, just very free and like not really feeling a lot of shame or overthinking things. And so they just give really dedicated performances, and then they get older and actually find that they can't really act as adults. And sometimes you see the opposite, where maybe they're not great as kids and then they improve. I think May's actress gets like a lot stronger as a performer as she becomes an adult on the show.
For sure.
I think, has gotten better too. I think like he's a lot stronger now. But I just think it's funny that early on, it's kind of clear that he's one of those kids where like they found a really cute kid who was like well cast in that sense. But every time he opens his mouth, he has a line in this scene where he's like, "Is mom mad at me?" You know, he just keeps at it like
it's said very awkward. It's like said with the awkwardness of like a Victorian child asking if she can, you know, if her governess is going to take her to the well or something, you know, like
he's like five, right? Or six or something. This actor, he's really young. So it's like, I am not genuinely, this is not me trying to bully this child. I just am.
And he's approved. No, that's true. He has approved. That's true. Yeah,
but I was kind of laughing at his delivery in this scene.
No, that's super valid. I do like one of the lines that I thought was just very sweet, where he's curled up on her lap and he asks her, "Can you fix the bad things like you fix people at work?" Like cute very sweetly line. Yeah, cute kid line. I don't know, I'm a sucker for these little parental scenes, I guess.
No, yeah. From there we go to Buck and Maddie making dinner, I have to say I was shocked by this scene's lack of white wine. It just feels like it should be
where
there,
is the white wine?
Typically in any scene of these two eating dinner, Maddie is uncorking a bottle of white wine. So I just found it odd that in this scene, she's instead like angrily tossing cherry tomatoes into a salad, which was also funny. But I was like, maybe it's a work night or something and they're not drinking wine.
She's doing dry January.
Yeah, maybe. Do you think it's supposed to be January in this part of the season?
It's LA.
It's not even
Christmas
yet.
Oh, that's true. I forgot they did a Christmas episode. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Back when they used to do Christmas episodes.
I was thinking at the top of the scene, who gave Buck a frying pan? I don't trust him with that.
He's a good cook. What are you talking about?
I don't know. I just like, he's so, I need to stop infantilizing Buck just a little bit in my head.
He
just
cooks
because
with
like
shallots now.
And sometimes he's just so stupid that like I feel like he'll like trip and he'll fall and he'll find a way to stab himself with it or something. I don't know.
I think you're underestimating. In any other situation, I would agree, but when it comes to cooking, I am a Buck is a good cook truther because it's in the text of the show. But even the show itself sometimes forgets that.
That's true.
But
that's
anyway,
true.
This isn't a very Buck heavy episode.
No, it's not. I just have this urge to throw him in a padded cell and just like not let him do anything.
Of course, or like put him in a little enclosure in the zoo so that you can always keep an eye on him and like feed him
exactly
carrots and stuff.
He has ample room to like run around, roam a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a wildlife reserve. Like it's not like a bad zoo.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the one that we saw with that episode with the tiger. Like the flamingo. We'll put him in the flamingo enclosure.
Right, he would love that.
He'll have lots of stimulation. But the point of this scene, really, I mean, like they're having their little sibling dinner moment. Maddie gets a couple of texts from Gloria at home.
Yeah, she like, won't leave her alone.
Don't know how Gloria got her number, first of all. Her contact saved, so probably they just have, like, I don't know, like a work group chat, and she saved all the contacts in there or something. I don't know. But Gloria is texting her, like, very, like, sort of threatening messages, very insecure messages, too, like, almost, like psychotic break messages, like, "I'm a good person. Yeah. I can't believe what you did to me. You're going to pay for this."
I feel like somebody needs to do like a wellness check on Gloria.
Yeah. Take the knives out of her house or something. I don't know. And it's a very short scene. So like, that's kind of all we get from that scene because it cuts right back to the Hen storyline. And
Hen is stalking Eva.
Again.
She sees Eva buying drugs, which is big, right? Because Eva, her whole thing was she had a drug problem, went to prison, now she's out, and so presumably this is a parole violation. So Hen continues to follow her, and she eventually follows her to her apartment or a motel or whatever it is. It's kind of hard to tell which one it is. She eventually goes to knock on the door, and Eva doesn't answer.
Well, she gets a call in the car first, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah.
She's about to get out of the car to go up to Eva's motel room or whatever it is. Maybe it's an apartment. It looks like a motel. Then she gets a call from Karen. Basically, Karen apologizes for like the things that she said. During their fight, she's like telling her like, "I love you. Like, you know, come home soon. Like, I want to be with you." And we'll sort this out together. And it's sort of it's a very sweet moment for them where, like, you see some healing happening in their relationship, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we're thankful for.
Mm-hmm. But it also adds some suspense to this, because you're kind of like, why is Hen here? Like, is she gonna cheat again? Is she gonna, like, kill Eva? Like, there's almost a little
that's
feeling
what
like
I was
that.
Getting like did,
yeah,
it, like, did Hen bring
phone,
a cleaver or something?
She says on the phone to Karen, she's like, I'm just filled with all this rage, and you're like, damn, is she gonna go, like, shoot Eva? But, you know, she hangs up, she goes to knock on the door and no one answers, and then she hears, like, glass breaking, and she sees through the window that Eva has fallen. She's unconscious. So, you know, the natural conclusion is that she's overdosing. Hen gets inside. And this is a great moment. I just love the drama of this. She gets in there. Eva is having an overdose. There's, like, foam. She's, like, foaming at the mouth. She's clearly, it's bad. And Hen just, like, she's about to call 911. And she just kind of stops. And she's like, what if I didn't?
What if she was out of my life permanently?
Yeah. And she almost leaves. She, like, gets to the door. And but of course, this is Hen, and, you know, this isn't that morally ambiguous of a show. So she does call 911. But it's
like
a great moment,
like,
of, like, wow, that's high drama. I like it.
It's like if that scene in Breaking Bad where Walter White sees Jane overdosing and, like, sort of lets her die, and it's like a big turning point for his character, like his descent into becoming a villain. If instead of, like, letting her die, he did call 911 and had her resuscitated and all that and everything, like, I just thought that it was an interesting mirror to that scene, because it's a very iconic scene in TV, and it's like, this is, like, deliberate, like, no, he's an awful person, but Hen isn't, you know. Kristen, send me your Breaking
Good,
Bad
awful
takes.
Person reference.
We'll share notes. But but she's a better person than that. So she does call 911. They get there. They administer Narcan. She is resuscitated, and Hen is just sort of standing, sort of sentinel in, like, the corner of the room. And as Eva sort of comes to, she sees her, and the EMT tells her that Hen saved her life. And Eva has something very interesting to say about it.
She says, that's because she loves me, right? And Hen is just like, you know what, Eva, I don't love you, I don't even hate you, I feel nothing for you. And
brutal.
Eva says, then why did you save me? And she, oh my god, I love this. She says, I save awful people every day, it's my job, and walks out. Boom. It's so
door
it's just so
closed.
Like, whoa, like, you know, like Hen's action movie one-liner. It's so cool.
And Hen mentions that she's, like, calling Eva's parole officer, she's gonna get her thrown back in jail. Which is what it is. And it just sort of shuts the door on their relationship,
right?
And honestly, and, like, listen, as much as I do love the high drama of this episode, I am about ready to be done with this storyline.
It's like,
I'm gonna be honest.
How much could they really drag this on for much longer? But yeah, then we get to Athena is arriving at a hospital, I think. And there's, like, a doctor there who's called her because she's pretty sure they've found the guy who shot the restaurant guy. And, you know, they say this guy came in with, like, crazy burns, and he says he got them grilling, but the wounds aren't consistent. Apparently, the guy who got shot in the restaurant had thrown hot oil on the guy. So these wounds would be consistent with that. And Athena gets there, and the guy is not in his room, and she finds him, like, unconscious in the, like, pain medication storage room or something, because he had been in pain.
He has a revolver in his waistband.
Yes, which she confiscates.
Presumably the weapon that he used to shoot the guy. And I have to know what their beef was. I have to know this guy and the cook's beef. I'm so nosy. I know it's probably
just
a robbery.
You know? He just held up the place, right?
Yeah,
you think
but
it's,
like,
more personal,
I just, like,
than that?
I hope it is, because I feel like that would be really juicy.
We get, so, like, in season 8, we get, like, a callback episode where we learn the backstory of these guys. I want to say, this scene is very odd to me, because I thought this was all taking place at a hospital, right? So why then does Athena get on her radio and call for RA units to come give medical attention to this guy. She says, there's a man here in need of medical attention. I was like, girl, you're at the hospital already.
Right.
Was there an explanation? And then we see him getting like carried away in a stretcher after, like, like into the ambulance. I'm like, where are they taking him? Another hospital? Did I miss? Is it like, is it not a hospital? Is it just like a little clinic or something?
I thought it was so a hospital. Confused. It looked like a hospital. She was like walking through the hallways. It looked like a hospital. He's just get a nurse.
He's in a room full of medication. I was like, literally. Yeah, can we not just page a doctor? Like, why are we...
just yell code blue and the entire floor will be on your ass, you know?
I was so confused. And we're probably going to get comments being like, duh, they explained it in this one line that they're actually in some other location. But it read... I was pretty sure it was a hospital, so I'm not sure why... Yeah. This happened.
It reads to the audience. It reads to the audience viewing at home like it's a hospital, which makes it a confusing character beat for Athena.
It's like that's what we're saying. It's like if somebody in this show, it's like if there was a scene on this show where somebody was in the fire station and caught on fire, and so someone radioed
call
to
the
118
fire department.
Radio the 118 saying, we need a ladder truck in here right now to put out this fire. And then we see the guy getting taken in a stretcher into the ambulance, and then they take him to a different fire station for some reason. It would be like that.
No, seriously. It's like if like Bobby was cooking dinner and a grease fire started and they called like the 125 or whatever, or like the 221 to like come
even
over from their fire station
sense.
And
because at least
no,
like,
it wouldn't.
Oh, you mean no. Cooking dinner at the station? I get it.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah,
you meant like at his house or something for some reason.
No. I mean like family dinner. You know what I mean?
That would be crazy. Yeah. They have all the equipment in the station and they say, call the 122.
We can't use it. We can't use it. We have to save it for the people of Los Angeles.
It's bad to use your own fire equipment on your own station. It's bad luck.
It's like saying, you know, the Scottish play in a theater or something.
Mm-hmm. Then we go back to Maddie at dispatch. And she gets another call from Gloria, who's still harassing her. Maddie has a fun moment where she's like, listen, Gloria, like, I learned from you. And then she, like, hangs up the phone. And then
Gloria is, like, elbow
calls...
deep in her villain arc. She's, like, going into psychosis, basically.
Yes. She's, like, a Lifetime villain in the third act of a Lifetime movie is how I would describe it. And she's, like, in her car in traffic on the road and when she's calling Maddie. And then she calls 911, like, makes up a fake identity as a police officer to get redirected straight to Maddie. And so she gets her on the phone again and she's like, well, I guess you can't hang up now because you're against the idea of hanging up on 911 calls, which doesn't really make any sense because, like, she is well within her rights to hang up on, like, frivolous calls.
Like, she says, like, you know, she reminds her, like, Gloria, it is against the law to make a fraudulent 911 call and to impersonate a police officer. Have a nice day. Hangs up.
Yeah. But then what should happen? Yeah. But Gloria, you know, tries to get out of traffic. So she kind of, like, pulls away into a side street. And a cat runs out into the road. She swerves, avoids hitting the cat, to her credit. Like, she may be racist and has hung up on hundreds, maybe thousands of people who called her when they called 911. But, like, at least she didn't kill that cat. Kind
cat
of a
survived.
Redeeming moment. Yeah.
And she's an animal lover and an innovative 911 dispatcher.
Racist. Swerves to avoid hitting the cat and she crashes her car. It doesn't look like a terribly disastrous crash, but, you know, she's stuck in her car. Oh my God. She's still on the line. And she says,
I lied and
I'm
said
stuck.
Maddie hung up. She didn't hang up. I lied. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
She's still on the phone. And she's stuck, believe it or not. She says, I'm stuck.
Would you say she might even be trapped in the car?
I think you could call it that. Yeah.
Yeah.
She might really be trapped.
She's stuck and she's trapped and she's an awful person.
All of those things.
She's all of those things. It's creepy AF if you think about it.
It's creepy AF. It's hashtag creepy AF. She's on the phone with Maddie, but the airbags have gone off and I guess she can't hear Maddie on the phone anymore. Like maybe her ears are ringing or the car is loud or whatever.
There's
she
like the hiss
hear.
Of the airbag, like the air coming out of it. It's probably really
and
loud.
Something about the crash has like jammed her. It's that thing. It's like why firefighters use the jaws of life. Her door has gotten stuck. So she starts just kind of pouring her heart out to Maddie on the call, assuming that Maddie has hung up. She starts kind of giving this great monologue where she's like, you know, I was going through my difficult divorce several months ago, and one day I got this dead end call from this woman who, you know, was in an active shooter situation, and I just knew that, you know, help wasn't going to come in time or whatever. And she was so afraid, and I knew she was going to die, and I just hung up, and I felt so relieved. And I love this monologue because it's kind of like real, you know, it's just it's genuinely emotional. And
it's like a deeply upsetting like thing to hear, and like the actress is selling the fuck out of it. I don't know the actress's name.
It's deeply upsetting, but it's also one of those like relatable. It's not like that. I'm not saying I would do this, but it's like a thing you can understand. You know, it's like that definitely. It is really taxing work to do a job like that, and like
it's very human. For sure. So, it's just like it really Maddie sort of like breaks down the facade of like Gloria in this like psychosis or this badass or whatever, and you find out that she's like just really this sort of like deeply sort of sad, sort of hurt person. It does kind of it does actually, like, I was genuinely feeling for her in this moment, because like it's hard to think you're gonna die, you know, and it's hard to watch your life fall apart.
Not that it excuses the racism. But yeah,
she's complex. She's got layers.
Exactly. And that's all all I meant when I said like I feel like the ultimate kind of explanation for this doesn't fully address like the apparent like xenophobic like racially motivated part of her hanging up on people, but in this I do it's a very emotional explanation for kind of the root of her behavior. Maddie's listening to all this. She cries on the call, you know.
Yeah, she does. Maddie, drink.
Classic Maddie. Drink for Maddie crying. And she manages to pinpoint her location, and she does get help there. The 118 shows up, and you know, Gloria's like, "You didn't hang up."
She wasn't abandoned because unlike Gloria, Maddie is not an awful person. Maddie is a good person.
Maddie's a good person.
And then so from there, sort of we get the wrap up with Gloria's story. She's saved. And then, you know, we see sort of like Hen is getting kind of like a background check on this guy, Nathaniel. Athena sort of like looked into his what he's all about, and he turns out to be just like a really stand-up citizen. He has a great life working a steady job at Home Depot. He counsels at-risk kids on the weekend. He has good credit. He's living a very honest life, and it seems like a deliberate thing that he did, like a choice that he made to live his life in this way, because after his wife passed from ovarian cancer, we get the full backstory. He had a wife who had ovarian cancer, and she passed away, and he started self-medicating with alcohol. And then after one too many DUIs, the court ordered him to attend rehab. And that was where he met Eva.
And, you know, he cleaned up his act, but he has this child he didn't know about out there in the world. But Hen's kind of worried because she's like, well, he sounds like such a great guy, like he's gonna look good in court. And she tells Athena about what happened with Eva, and she specifically mentions having that moment of thinking about just leaving her there, and she says, "Does that make me an awful person?" Little callback to the title of the episode. But Athena's like, no, it just makes you human. And Athena kind of starts going into her end of episode monologue. There was a funny moment here where she has a line where she says, like, "You gotta have faith." And I swear to God, I was 100% expecting a faith needle drop. But it didn't happen.
Like Faith Hill?
Some other song.
Or, wait, Faith by who?
No, Faith. Is it George Michael who did that song?
Okay. Oh, that would have been fun. That would have been very
It would have been
nose.
Extremely stupid, because she literally just said the lyric from the song. But knowing this show, I was expecting it. But no, they play some other song. And we see,
also, musically, not the vibe at all.
No, that's true. But, you know, if it were up to me, I would do it for the laughs.
For the memes.
We get kind of our wrap-up montage that we often get at the end of these episodes, where we see Eva's going back to prison. The 118 is... They're getting the guy, the shooter from the restaurant. They are, for some reason, carrying him on a gurney out of the hospital into an ambulance, presumably to bring him to a different hospital. Athena
is straight to jail.
Yeah, I mean, are they taking him to, like, the prison medical bay? I don't know.
I don't know.
But Athena's arresting him. Then we also see the 118 rescuing Gloria, and we see Sue kind of congratulate Maddie on, you know, reporting all that, and Maddie tells her that she's not going to let things get to her, which was something she kind of set up with Athena earlier in the episode about how she's not going to let awful people get to her. And we also see Denny's biological father has, like, sat down to a meeting with Hen and Karen, and he's actually telling them that he wants to follow their lead, and he's being very respectful, and he says, you know, I get it, that Denny is your son and you're his parents, and I wouldn't want to get in the way of that. So
Athena mentions earlier that, like, Nathaniel, all he's really seeking at the moment is, like, visitation rights, because he wants to get to know his son, which I think, honestly, I think visitation is reasonable.
I really do.
And I think that I'm really glad that they're, instead of continuing to spiral and dragging the storyline out further, just meeting with the guy and having a productive conversation and just like talking about this as people, you know, it's a, it's a really great way to sort of wrap this up on a really mature note, you know.
And I remember they I feel like they kind of forget about this guy for a little while, and then they kind of bring up more drama with him in season six, and it does turn into more of like the dragging it out thing that then you would expect from, I don't know. I feel like,
unfortunately,
but it's not bad. But I feel like both times they've brought him up, it's sort of like they bring him up implying that he's going to be a part of Denny's life, and then we just kind of don't see him again. But I get
maybe,
that it's
maybe
hard
the actor's
to juggle.
Booked and busy somewhere else or something. I don't know.
Maybe I get that it's hard to juggle like every single peripheral character you bring up, like Paisley the dog.
But why is it that Hen's storylines always get shafted? Well, I think, well, we kind of know why, but
I wish it weren't
that's
true.
On that.
You know, Kristen was the only person out here trying to give Hen the time she deserves on this show. And I stand by that. But then we see the 118 sitting down to family dinner. I have to ask, why does Eddie sit at the head of the table? Why is it Bobby and Eddie like their mom and dad? You know, how does that make any sense? Why is Athena not on that end? Or like,
because Jane, that's where the princess sits.
Oh, okay. You know, when you put it like that, I get it and I support it. That's the princess seat.
I was just thinking, like, so nice of them to finally, for once, invite the other members of the squad to eat dinner with them.
True. We see some firefighters
so nice to
we
have
don't
the
recognize.
Extras
yeah, we
at
see
the
some
table.
Extras around this table. So it's like finally the 118 are bonding with not just their little clique of main characters.
What was that tweet that's like headcanon for the show is that all the other firefighters at the station think that the core group is really cliquey and they don't really fuck with them like that?
Oh, you have to imagine that that's the case, because I realize you could explain it away as like, oh, well, I guess our main characters must just be, they're only ever on shift with each other, right? Like they're the A shift or the B shift or whatever. But no, we see often that there are other firefighters like standing around as extras, sometimes even in the truck with them. So it's like they just don't talk to anybody else.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said about having a friend group and like having friends at work, but then like when it's so insular that you don't invite anyone else into your conversations, it just
like not even once.
it's fascinating stuff. Like, God bless Ravi for getting as much of an in as he did.
maybe it's like a TV show thing where actually they do interact with those people, but it only ever happens off screen. So maybe like in the moments of the show we don't see, they also have like a whole other set of storylines going on with all the other random people we don't know from the 118.
Yeah, or it could be like the Glee thing where it's like they're the band and these are the these are the Glee Club members. I don't know. I mean, did
for some reason.
I mean, there were more doctors at the hospital than just, you know, Meredith and Dr. Bailey and their sort of crews, right?
I mean, like, it's true, but at the same time, I think pretty much everyone that they were working with on a daily basis was like a character on the show. Like, I guess there were like nurses and stuff who were more peripheral or in the background, but like, I feel like whenever they brought in a different doctor, it would usually be because they were in like a different department or something, you know? So it wasn't just, I don't know, it felt a little more normal on, it didn't feel like there were like other surgeons like in the same like residency program or whatever who were not getting any time. Maybe there's some of that, but
I don't know, like especially like with the departments that are more like on the sidelines in that show, like Callie Torres can't be the only orthopedic surgeon at like, you know, Seattle Mercy Grace, right?
I guess
like,
it also does Seattle Mercy Grace. I think it's Seattle Grace.
What did I call
and
it?
And then they have like a rival hospital called Mercy West. And then
you're right.
Later, Seattle Grace gets changed to Grace Sloan.
Grace Sloan Memorial. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For reasons. For unfortunate reasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be funny if 911 did that and at some point in the course of the show, the 118 gets renamed to like the Bobby Nash Memorial Fire Station?
I mean,
when he
dies
in a tragic fire accident.
There are rumors that Peter Krause wants out of the show. There are rumors.
Well, yeah, but I doubt they would kill him. It's one of those things where it's like his character has like had so many tragedies that I think they know that it would be like a little too mean to kill him off. I mean, you can never really predict, but I feel like this show, it's not like a Grey's Anatomy where they're just going to kill off people left and right.
No. I mean, Tim said, like, in an interview, I think, that he said that, like, he could kill anyone. He just doesn't want to because he loves all of the characters.
Which is so funny for him to just admit. Like, that's not very good showrunner form. But, you know, at least he's real about it.
But they'd probably have him retire to Florida or something.
Exactly. Like, I feel like they would just have him and Athena retire and move. And then...
Can you imagine that was the end of his storyline after all that? That he went through, he fucking like dies tragically in like a fire or something.
That's it's why, because like, there are like some Eddie haters. Like, I think there were like some Buck Tommy stans who wanted Eddie to get killed off. And it's like, in a similar way, it's like, it's not just that I like Eddie and I want him to survive. It's like, do you understand how cruel that would be narratively if you just. It's actually, and I mean, I shouldn't say that this can't happen because actually, I'm reminding myself of the Dean Winchester on Supernatural story.
Literally, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
it's like the quintessential.
Him go through
how to do it wrong.
All these things. They had him go through all these things, and then finally the culmination of his storyline is he just fucking like dies unceremoniously. And so it's kind
tetanus.
Of like
right.
when you set up a character to like go through all this trauma and stuff, especially I didn't watch all of Supernatural, so like I don't even know all the ins and outs of that. But like with somebody like Bobby or even Eddie, like having all this trauma around like death and like PTSD, and like with Bobby, it's like his whole family died. With Eddie, it's like not only did his whole like military crew die, but also like his wife is dead. The main thing I always think of is like you really would want Christopher to be an orphan. Like that's crazy. that you would want his other parent to also die. Like that, I think, is the main reason they would never kill off Eddie.
But Jane,
and with Bobby,
if Eddie dies, custody goes to Buck, and then he gets to be a single dad.
Ew. There's probably some deranged people out there who want that. That's so mean.
Probably many fanfics.
With Bobby, it's like, you know, his whole thing is moving on from this huge trauma and, you know, moving on from his feelings of being suicidal, of wanting to die because he was so miserable. And so if you just had him die at the end of the show, like that would be so cruel in a narrative sense.
It would.
Anyway,
would you say it would even be awful?
I would say it would be awful. And I would look at Tim Minear as an awful person if that turned out to be Bobby's fate in the show. I would look at Tim Minear and I would say, you're awful. And then I would just leave it at that. I wouldn't even do the little joke about it's actually a compliment.
Well, I think maybe with that, we should probably leave it at that because this episode's been going on for a minute. And I think that this was a pretty damn good episode.
I think so, too. I think we were so funny and so smart and so lovable in this episode.
And so referential and so smart with our references. And honestly, to be frank, I think we kind of towered above everyone else, not just like listening at home, but just in general, in the world.
In the world.
For
how
many things that we pulled from talking about in this episode and how intelligent we were. It was very, it was a very edifying episode.
Yeah, we're so culturally literate, and I just hope everybody appreciates that, really. So, you know, rate us 5 stars if you agree with everything we just said.
Yeah.
And
leave a comment, of course.
Leave a comment, and we will see you next time.
See you next time
for episode 6, whatever that is.
Whatever that is, we'll find out. All right, good night, guys.